Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Welcome back, everybody, to another week of Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara the Shirinian.
If this microphone's working. Hello? Hello?
We got your mic on. Go ahead.
Microphone. My name is Rich over here.
And we also have a special guest. We have someone who attended the Tokyo Game Show, which is crazy because I've never even been to Tokyo.
It's the holy grail of video game nerd fests.
Is it? Is that only because E3 is gone, or has Tokyo Game Show always been cool?
No, it's just because it's on another continent, and it's Tokyo.
Okay. So, Ernie.
How's it going, everybody? Yeah, I attended Tokyo Game Show 2007. It was a blast, so hopefully we'll be talking a lot about the games we were able to play there. And
I don't want to talk about the games. I just want you to talk about the booth babes.
Oh, well, there was plenty of that, too. There's plenty of time for that. We can fill a whole show with just that, but, I mean, there's plenty of cool games to
okay.
go
with. Okay, so, fill a hole with
so, we, so we know what we're going to talk about for the rest of the show. All right, it's settled.
All right, so we have had listeners who go to chatterboxgameshow.com and go onto the chat and say, hey, we want to talk to the guy who went to TGS, and he's finally here. So we're going to do that later. You've been wanting to talk about Odin Sphere for, like, 3 or 4 months now.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we want to do that. And also, Rich was having a little hissy fit before we left the house today about this possible rumor, whatever, of Bungie maybe leaving Microsoft or
it's not
Microsoft
really it. It's
letting
not a hissy
Bungie
fit.
Go.
That's unfair to say that.
I don't think so.
Maybe, was it a big
should
hissy fit?
Should I hold the mirror
fit?
Up next time?
I don't know.
It was a small hissy fit. But I am also curious to hear why you think there's no chance in hell that Bungie might be separating from Microsoft.
It's impossible.
And who cares, more importantly?
That's an important question, too.
It's just the rumor on the street.
What with Bungie in the news with all this Halo craziness?
Because didn't Microsoft buy them out?
Yeah.
So they were apart from Microsoft.
They were independent, yeah.
And
yeah.
Now they're dependent
completely
on Microsoft.
Owned by Microsoft.
Yeah. And now what? They're going to like branch off again? What's up with that?
That's my whole point.
Word on the street is that they're going to keep Halo and let Bungie go.
Okay.
I mean, not like that's not the nice way of saying they're going to fire them. It's just like there's some rumor about how they're going to separate away from Microsoft. I assume it's amicable.
Well, really, I mean, you know, I know at least, you know, the principal of that company is not there anymore. You know, he made his own studio.
Yeah.
Presumably taking a bunch of people with him.
They left and they made
right?
Stubbs the Zombie.
Right. So
see how they're doing.
Wide Load Games.
Too bad Stubbs wasn't very fun.
Yeah.
One of my Armenian brothers, I might add.
One of your Armenian brothers
yes.
is the head
don't,
of Wide Load.
Don't talk over me when I talk about my Armenian brothers.
All right.
So what I'm trying to say is that, like, okay, well, who at Bungie now really was, you know, what Bungie really was, which was originally Bungie?
Well,
anybody?
See,
who knows?
At this point, Halo 3 defines Bungie. And so whoever's there now is Bungie because it's their most successful property.
Well, I mean, I guess that's valid. But
and I'm really just guessing that that's true, that it's their most successful property, but or release.
Hands
but,
down.
But my
Dude,
point is
Halo's
that
Halo's
like,
one of the most successful games ever.
Yeah,
Bungie is Bungie in name only now, you know?
Yeah,
yeah
so
like
is
Atari,
Blizzard.
So. Is balls.
Yeah, Atari.
Like, nobody at Blizzard today used to work there originally for the most part.
Yeah.
They're a completely different
suck.
Company.
Yeah,
yeah exactly.
Actually, they're probably pretty well received.
Well, I mean, World of Warcraft, yeah, but I mean, like, if you look at the team that did Diablo 2, almost none of those employees are there.
Well, so I'm still waiting for their next Lost Vikings game, so...
That's never going to happen.
The two weren't enough?
You just wait. The first one was awesome. Actually, the second one kind of sucked, so I was just always hoping that they would, you know, redeem themselves.
Okay. Do you want to redeem yourself by talking about Odin Sphere?
Well, you know, there's no need to redeem myself, but I actually do want to relate a revelation that I recently had to all you guys.
Ooh.
And this is the connection you're not going to get at first, okay? But we'll get there. All right, I saw this movie. It was called Uzumaki. All right? It's this really old school Japanese horror flick, okay? Now, what does that have to do with video games? Well, up until the point where I saw a certain scene, absolutely nothing. And then I see this scene where, like, okay, this movie's crazy. First of all, it's like every single thing that happens, like all the cinematography, shot for shot exactly, even though it's live action, it could have, like, if somebody made an anime out of this, it would have been shot precisely the same way. And there's really no way for me to convey what I mean by that other than you have to go see it. But anyway, here's the deal, right? There's this one scene where this girl gets this melon from, like, you know, a shopkeeper somewhere on the street, right? And, like, the guy gives this melon to her, right? Except this melon is, like, the most platonic, ideal, video game-style melon you could ever possibly conceive of.
We're discussing a piece of melon, right?
Yes. This is the interesting thing. This melon, okay, it's, like, it's round, right? Just like a melon, okay? Uh-huh. It's got this branch on it, right? Where the branch is, like, exactly as wide as the melon itself.
Stripes on the side?
It's got, no, it's not a striped melon, it's just a regular melon. And then it's got, like, the little, like, very, like, geometric curl in the branch of it. You know, it's like a, like, it's almost like there's, like, a video game icon from, like, Pac-Man or whatever when you go get the melon. It's like that showed up on the screen, except, you know, instead of, you know, 8x8 pixels, you know,
okay,
fully realized.
So what? Why is this amazing?
And it just made me think, what I realized was that a lot of the things that are kind of like in our video game culture, kind of like just conventions of the video game culture, they're really, you know, stuff that came out of the Japanese, you could call it like the cuteness culture. Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah?
It's slowly sinking in.
I could say some stuff like, I mean, coming from Japan, it's kind of crazy. So walking through the airport, right, there's these shops on the side of the airport and the train stations where they sell, like, chocolates, fruit, whatever. And they have their own
little... Any melons?
No, I didn't see any melons. Apparently, the customs doesn't allow me to bring back melons, or else I would have brought you back one of those perfect
melons.
Well,
it's because they want to keep them for themselves, obviously.
But each of the shopkeepers have their own specific special costume, which looks like something out of an RPG. They have the little hat, the little skirt, the little apron, and all of them are color-coded to what the booth looks like. And we're talking about the airports and the train stations. So even in 2007, they have an exact dress code. I mean, the cops all dress exactly the same with their hat, perfect, and everything along those lines. So as far as uniform goes in video game culture, I could definitely see where that comes from, especially in, like, RPGs and things of that nature.
Are you saying that all the people in Japan look like they're a video game character?
Yeah.
That's pretty much what it sounded like.
Pretty
That's
much.
Cool.
Or maybe video game characters just look like everybody in Japan.
Someone needs to explain to me why I have not yet visited Japan.
Everybody wears, you know, knee-high boots and stuff like that, and, you know.
Dude, we should totally, we'll just go tomorrow. How about that?
Let's do it.
That's a deal.
All right, we're going to
I have, like,
tomorrow.
$12. Will that get me to Japan?
We'll put you in the suitcase. It's fine.
All right.
Perhaps I could mail a piece of you to Japan for $12. All right, so if you're going to talk about Odin Sphere for real, we only really have like a minute left.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it for just a minute. So okay. I could start talking about it and then get cut off and then resume.
That's how we roll around here, I guess.
All right. So like Odin Sphere is really interesting, right? It's this another... I talked about the last Vanillaware game last episode.
Yeah.
Right, and Vanillaware has this habit of like making their graphics really, really big, which, you know, I don't like so much. But what I do like is that it's just like everything that they do is just it's so very carefully constructed. Right, it's very, very beautiful. I mean, like the production values for this game, you know, for a 2D game are like totally over the top. So you're just always by over the top. I mean, in quality, right? Not just like, you know, it's not like there's a million explosions on the screen or whatever, right? And so, like, everything about it just has, like, this... It's just so impressive. I mean, like, every single thing feels like it's got, like, this little, like, animation to it, but not really, so that it's kind of, like, moving. Like, there's few things that are actually perfectly still, right? And just, like, it makes the whole world seem really, really alive. And
so, this is a role-playing game.
It's actually... It's an action game with, like, resource management RPG-style elements. But you'll hear more about that when we return.
Will do.
Hey, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
I'm Alon.
Rich.
And I am Rich.
That's
Sorry,
Rich.
I was distracted by the IRC channel.
All right. I think...
talking with the listeners.
Alon, I think you might have to confiscate Rich's new computer now.
I was talking to the people that actually listen to the show.
All right, so reminding everybody that I want them to go over to uat.edu to learn about the University of Advancing Technology. They help make this show happen, and we appreciate that. Now, moving forward and kind of backwards at the same time, you're going to keep talking about Odin Sphere for a minute here. You were telling me that its graphics are lush and beautiful and big, I don't know anything about the game.
Yes, I was getting to that.
Okay.
So it's actually really interesting because, you know, Odin Sphere is actually a 2D side-scrolling action game, which is really, really cool. And I was very surprised because the player package, in other words, like the mechanics that the player uses to interact with the game world, it's actually pretty well done. The game is basically just comes down to stick and move, right? But that's not a bad thing.
That sounds like Russian Attack to me.
No, Russian Attack is like stick and try to move and like jump and crouch accidentally and get run over and repeat 500 times.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, very frustrating. But, I mean, you know, you just... It's pretty much straight-up action, and then you get, like, you know, there's these kind of, like, alchemical combinations that you can do with different items. So there's a really interesting kind of dynamic happens where, you know, you combine items to make other items, right? To then, you know, kind of, like, concoct this array of resources that you have to spend on the next stage to kill all the enemies more quickly, which will result in you getting more items to then combine in more ways, right? So you kind of like manage your items in order to kind of get even more of them as you go along, which is kind of interesting.
Is there any storyline that would make me want to play this game?
There's actually, good thing you asked. Indeed, there's actually...
Which is ironic, since I traditionally don't care about storyline in games.
The really interesting they did about this game is that... There's basically six scenarios, okay? There's six characters, and there's one storyline, okay? And what happens is you play through each one sequentially, but they all overlap on this continuum of time. So there's one story, and you get to see it from six different points of view, which is really cool because, you know, some of them overlap completely, some of them overlap partially.
So you have to play the game six times to play through all of it?
Yeah.
You play the game once. You
play
you live through a single
You play the game
six times.
Well, this is. I'm glad you brought that up too, because it. You know, I'm like about maybe almost done with the second scenario, and it's like it's getting pretty tedious. It's so kind of cool because like each time you get a new character, that character has a little different mechanics than the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like one. You know, the first girl can fly, and the other. You know, the next guy you get has like this crazy like spiraling slash attack that the other ones don't have, and so it kind of, like, it changes the dynamics a little, but, I mean, it's been taking, like, what, I don't know, like, 7 or 8 or 10 hours to go through each, you know, scenario, and it's a bit too long.
Can I take a moment to point out one thing here?
Of course.
You're exceptional at complaining about all sorts of games.
And why, thank you a lot. That warms my heart,
Can pinpoint, well, that's why we have our continuous challenge of what can't Ara complain about, what game can't he complain about. And you do a spectacular job of expressing exactly what it is that's really, really bugs you about that game. When it comes to expressing something positive about a game, I have to admit, I think you fall a little short.
Well,
because
you know,
so far
I
still don't know what makes this game great. So you just say it's really interesting.
I've just had so much more practice at complaining.
You don't know him enough, Ernie. He could go on.
Oh, I believe
he could expound for 20 minutes on why a menu blurring pisses him off. Nice. Not only can he has.
Okay, I got something for you. I got something special just for you.
Okay.
All right? They do a cool thing about the menus in this game that's
ingenious. I can't wait.
Okay? You be quiet for a minute.
I want to hear this.
Okay? It was like one of those things where once you find out about it, you're just like, wow, that's such a great idea, and it's so obvious, why doesn't everybody do it? But nobody thought about it except for these guys. Here's the thing, like, when you get a yes or no question in the game, right, like any kind of prompt, whether it's saving or whatever, right, in this game, the cursor starts out, like, in the middle, like, in a non-valid position.
Uh-huh.
So... In order to, like, there's no default. In order to make a choice, in order to say yes or no, You have to actually either press up or down to put it to yes or no, and then press the button.
I can respect that. Which, you can make a conscious decision.
Just sounds like an extra step.
It's not an extra step. It's a device that forces you, exactly what Alon said, to make a conscious decision every time, which is great because there's a lot of situations in UI design where it's not really clear what the default should be.
Does it ask you like three times, like, are you sure you want to save
Heck
over this
no,
file?
It doesn't.
Because I hate that in games where they're like, you want to save this file? Yes. You want to save this here?
Yeah, well,
yes.
You know why they
over
do that?
This is especially
file?
Frustrating because he was just yes. introduced to Microsoft Vista where...
Yeah, well, Vista's
every
a whole
single
other
program
thing,
is like, are you sure you want to run this program? Yes, I'm sure. I clicked it.
Yeah, well,
anyways.
I don't know about Vista, but you know why they have a lot of that in a lot of video games?
No.
Because there's no turning back?
No, it's because there's a lot of standards rules, and they kind of like, I don't want to say that they enforce them very strictly, because there are some games that kind of like do it in a more fluid way that makes sense and you don't feel like you're being asked 20 times to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of developers, right, that are afraid because, you know, there's a set of standards in the UI that you have to adhere to, right? So a lot of developers will just be like, okay, well, we're just going to, you know, we're not going to try to do anything crazy, like force the player to make a conscious decision every time. We're not going to try to do any outrageous designs. We just want to go by the book and do it as simply as possible.
Otherwise, you'll have to go back to the code and rehash it and take longer in your cycle?
Right. Otherwise, there's that. Otherwise, you know, we're afraid that it won't pass standards and it'll have to go back and forth, and that kind of iteration takes a long time. And so it's kind of understandable that, you know, the developers don't want that kind of back and forth to happen. They want to minimize that. But the problem is that, at least, you know, in my experience, out of fear that like doing a certain thing will get pushed back, they try to be like very, very strict about like, you know, adhering to the letter of the standard. And a lot of times what that results in, much like, I don't know, laws in this country, even though something might adhere to the letter exactly, it kind of like tends to lose the spirit of it at the same time. So you'll get like, you know, oh, are you sure 12 times? Or, I mean, it's not 12 times, obviously.
It's usually like two or three.
But it's, you know, it's enough to notice, right?
Yeah.
And it's enough for it to be annoying.
Have you ever tried to not play an encore in Guitar Hero 2?
No, I haven't, actually. I've always said yes to that.
What happens when you say no? I'm very curious about that.
Well, actually, it's pretty easy to skip out. You just get one no. But there's some part of it where... It asks you like 12 times. I can't remember. Was it the last? Is it playing the last level in Guitar Hero 2?
I don't know.
Like, do you want to play Freebird? Yes. Are you sure? Are you absolutely positive?
It's going to melt your brain. Are you sure?
There's something. It's either not playing a song or playing the last one or something where Guitar Hero 2 asks you many, many, many times.
Yeah.
If you want to do it. Which I thought was, they were doing it for effect. It was funny.
So that was a really cool thing. The other really interesting thing about Odin Sphere, and this is going to pretty much wrap it up for me in this game, is that it kind of feels like you're playing as Zangief all the time.
Because, I can certainly relate to that.
And it has nothing to do with wrestling or spinning pile drivers.
Hang on, for those not in the know, Zangief, he's the fat, slow character in Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and you know, I think this was a very conscious decision that they decided to do in this game design-wise, and it's not really bad, but it makes the dynamic really interesting. There's a lot of commitment to all your moves, right? Just like Zangief. You know, like, yeah. If you decide I'm going to do the spinning pile driver, like, you know.
You know you're going to do the spinning pile
driver. Well, I mean, you got to do it, and once you commit to doing it, you know, you're open from, you know, all kinds of bad things from happening if you do it wrong.
I never thought I'd ever hear a Street Fighter 2 analogy out of you.
I don't know. When I hear Zangief,
there
I
you
think,
go.
I think stretchy pants. That's just me, though.
I mean, you know, I had to figure out a way to work in the spinning pile driver somehow.
No, I can. I'm very happy to hear that out of you. I'm just.
It's just like
I'm very proud.
This guy at the gym that I see all the time, me and my friend, every time we saw him, we made sure to say the word spinning pile driver with an earshot of him every time because he looked exactly like Zangief. Except for the scars, of course.
He doesn't have the big scar across his chest.
No, he doesn't have any scars,
the
but
big
his
furry scar across his
face
chest.
Looks exactly like Zangief, so.
All right, somehow I fear that we may have gone a little bit off track.
No, we're perfectly on track.
That's fine.
Odin Sphere, Zangief, dude at the gym.
So explain to me, what is the Zangief connection to Odin Sphere? Again, I'm closing my eyes. I'm trying to imagine.
Because there's a lot of commitment to your actions. You know, when you jump...
When you press the buttons, you better make sure you press them right.
Yeah, well, there's... I mean, you know, if you're doing like a combo, right? I mean, you have to do it completely, and it takes time for you to execute a lot of actions. So there's not a lot of, like, there's a couple quick jabs you can do, right? But there's commitment to a lot of the things. And it's kind of, that's actually kind of like anti-action game in a way, because it kind of slows down the action. But at the same time, once you understand that that's what you're supposed to do and that's how the dynamics work, then it makes the game flow a lot better.
All right, lesson learned. Odin Sphere is like Zangief, not Karnov. We'll be back.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Righto, we are back. The Chatterbox Game Show. It's actually Chatterbox Video Game Radio, but chatterboxgameshow.com is our website, where I'm busy chatting in the old chatter room.
That's right, where everyone is a... I don't want to use the official term because nobody will know what that means.
Oh, come on. The people listening to the show know what an op is.
Everyone's an op. Everyone's an op who listens to Chatterbox.
Apparently. That's how we run the show here. If you're a Chatterboxer, then... and you run the show, essentially.
You may as well just be the engineer.
They know I've got an open invitation for anyone to come into the studio. If you're a listener, you can.
Our engineer doesn't want to hear that, though.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, they don't lock the doors here. So
no, just come in anytime.
They will as of tomorrow, I think. All right, so Ernie, it is your time to shine.
Right.
You went over to that fancy schmancy Japan place.
Apparently, it's where you want to go if you want to find out about games. But
how many days is the show? Because we were hearing.
It's
actually, like
14
press release stuff was happening way
Dream
ahead of the show.
On.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually four real days of the game show, two business days, Thursday and Friday.
And are the business days like a week in advance so that they can get it all out of the system and like play with the women for a week and then they actually do the video game?
Negative. There was no time to rest. Actually, no rest.
We were
wicked.
Hearing like. Press conferences and stuff happening a week before the show.
There were some
happened.
Like conferences, like yeah, there were a couple of conferences and things of that nature. But the actual game show itself and the keynote speeches and things of that nature were done during the first couple.
So,
of
So we got you a badge the show as press, and you told me that you were going to go one day as the press when it was only press, and then the next day with like your brother or your life partner or whatever you were going with.
Yeah, my brother. Yeah,
right. I don't know who you were going with. But we got you the badge so you could get in there and you could tell us about it. Now, I don't know, though. Did you go on the day that you had to be press?
Or yeah, we. So my brother, who knows Japanese, obviously, we found a way to get him in on a loophole or something along those lines. Because he knew Japanese, he was my quote-unquote interpreter.
Nice.
Sweet.
Oh, that's so awesome.
That is the Chatterbox way, listeners.
So you got to be creative. He was also a photographer, too.
Ooh.
But he took photography sophomore year in high school. Excellent.
You guys, next time there's a video game convention in Armenia, we're totally there.
In Armenia?
I'm thinking.
Yeah, because I'm going to be the translator.
Because there's a lot.
I'll have you know that the Chatterbox Video Game Radio Show has gotten me into the Adult Entertainment Expo as well. It's very these credentials are very helpful.
Well, man, I guess I'll be the next person with a badge to that place then, right?
All right, so you get into the show, you're on press day, you're with your brother, he gets... the way around there,
so,
I guess.
So we get there. I mean, obviously, there's, you know, in true Japanese fashion, there's no security whatsoever. We probably just could have walked in without a press pass, to be honest with you.
Okay.
It was
they use the honor system.
Yeah, you have honor, grasshopper. But yeah, it's very, very true in that fact. So we get there. We get low. You know, we get our stuff. I mean, it's 5 minutes before we get checked in, and we're good to go. We check out a bunch of the booths. It was a gigantic, gigantic area. One gigantic press hall. So, you know, make our way through the different booths, things of that nature. Xbox had a huge showing. PS3 had one of the largest showings. But Nintendo had no booth pretty much to be found. They let their third-party designers, which I don't think they really have any third-party
designers.
That's
weird.
Well, no, that's because they run Space World or whatever the hell the Nintendo thing is.
Did they do that?
They pretty much abandoned TGS.
So what is it, like Hudson,
well,
and that's it?
Yeah, they had Hudson, who is coming out with a new Wii Play, which is exactly like Wii Play, but it's the same games, but the Wii characters, the Mii characters, just look a little bit different. So they're playing tennis and golf and
all right, well, that's totally worth it.
Yeah. So there's also...
Let's not confuse Wii Sports with Wii Play.
Yes, okay. Wii Sports, yes.
Wii, one of those games with stuff.
Do you see the icy stare in Alon's eyes? You never make that mistake again.
I know. If I said Mario in some lame context...
All right, here's the thing. What I don't care about is the games that they showed and stuff. I want to know how this show differs from the shows that I got to. Because really...
They speak
Japanese.
We know
about the game. Although, Easy Money wants to know, he's one of the chatters, right? He wants to know a little bit about Metal Gear Solid 4.
Okay, well, that's the main thing that I really want to get a hold of.
On the 360?
Metal Gear Solid 4 was probably one of the biggest things. They had a line get into, you know, they had Metal Gear Solid Plus, which is the portable ops substance version, which is probably going to be coming out soon.
Wait, I heard that was the old age only version. No?
Not too sure about that.
Oh, darn.
But it's the, so you expect a substance just like the other Metal Gear Solids that have come out for the PSP with new features and things of that nature. The Metal Gear Solid 2 graphic novel was debuting there as well, which a lot of people are kind of looking forward to. But, yeah, so we waited in line. Fair. Yeah, so getting to the point, basically, got into the booth. They had this huge show, you know, display. And finally got to be able to play some games. So the thing about Metal Gear Solid 4 actually was the control system is a little different in the fact that...
Keep talking.
Oh, okay. In the fact that it's got the same Metal Gear Solid feel where the camera's in place for one section. You hit the triangle button, it goes into third-person view. And you hit the triangle button again, and it goes into first-person view.
Wait, the feel where every button has three different functions?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a pain because, let's say if I need to go into first-person mode, I need to hit that button twice, and then I need to control my camera to get into the exact place where I need it to be. And then if I zoom out, and then I need to control my camera back, and then I zoom out, I go back to the overall Metal Gear Solid feel of the camera.
Dude,
so,
stop complaining. You're just not hardcore.
Right. Oh, man. Clearly this calls for future systems, and this is going to be my prediction now for the future here, to come with cybernetic enhancements, because we clearly don't have enough fingers.
We should just go back to the NES Power Glove. Just make everything like that. Then you have a whole bunch of... Dude, that'd be awesome.
Dude, that thing was... Prediction? That was like the lamest thing ever, dude.
Dude, if the power glove... If the power glove had 6-axis motion controls, dude...
I mean, think about
play
just the
Lair,
term. Like, the power...
And work.
The power... They had to call it...
I just strapped two DualShock 3s to my hand.
Because it was so lame. I mean, that's like, you know, hiring a company called, like, Quality Carpeting to install your carpet. Yeah.
But I gotta
it's
say,
not quality.
For Metal Gear Solid 4, the graphics are intense, and you want to make sure that you do not get seen, because they expect now that you have first-person mode that you're able to snipe people, and people will be coming at you with reckless abandon. So make sure you stay unseen. So as far as Metal Gear Solid 4, it showed a lot of really cool cutscenes with the new people from Foxhound, if you're familiar with that. There's some pretty hardcore characters that like to shoot people repeatedly in the head, so you're going to have fun with that. There's a strange, outbreak monkey that apparently plays a role in the game that's is injected with the nanomachines who may be your only hope for survival. So,
outbreak monkey?
Did you read that right off of a...
Is this
no, that was all from my head. Yeah, they had a display with some crazy guy with a monkey, and you see Snake like
is this turning
holding
into
a monkey,
4?
And he's like, "What do I do with this monkey? Do I shoot it? Do I have a cigarette? I'm not quite sure what to do with this thing." So it's a lot of crazy plot things that they're doing with it, but it looks beautiful about what they're going with it. So it's really kind of cool the way they got it going, but
what's
a little bit of camera tweaks, I
the
think.
The interactive versus non-interactive ratio in this game?
Oh, yes, perhaps the most important question of all.
Well, considering
I
only...
get to really the bottom line.
Considering I only really played the game for about 15 minutes... And the cutscene I kind of had to skip through so I can actually play the game. You know, I didn't really have too much time, but they actually had about a good 20-minute video before going in about all these different cutscenes with the people from Foxhound and something about Solid Snake and Revolver Ocelot being one or something
and
like
monkeys.
That. And monkeys.
I really get the impression that the guy, Kojima, should just write a book. Or make a movie.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, right? Because he is he professes himself to be a Hollywood and movie buff, right? It's almost as if he really wants to make film, and he got, you know, oh, he got stuck doing this crappy game thing, so now he has to make hopelessly successful games for the rest of his life.
Physically, he looks like one of those guys who's just like the overzealous film student guy who's trying really hard to do something like deep and meaningful, but doesn't quite get it.
Right? Well, yeah. Well, I never quite got it because anytime that the series started to feel deep and meaningful, it started to make absolutely no sense whatsoever.
I'm one of the biggest fans of Metal Gear Solid 2. Like, I didn't mind the cutscenes.
It's one of my favorite games too.
I loved it. But really, you look at the guy and you're like, wait, he made that game? I expected him to be older. Anyway, we're going to get back. I want to hear about the stuff that I actually care about in the TGS. Because so far,
Booth Babe,
I'm not impressed.
Oh, wow.
So we'll be back. I want to hear more about this.
Let's do this.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name, you guessed it, it's Ara, without the U, thank you.
My name's Alon!
Gotta make that disclaimer there.
And my name is Rich.
And we've got Ernie, too, don't we?
And we've got Ernie to talk about...
Over there, in the corner.
This crazy Tokyo Game Show. Okay, so, I don't care about the game so much.
Right.
Unless you can tell me something I don't already know.
Right.
But, like...
It's gonna be a lot of blood in Ninja Gaiden 2. But yeah. You already knew that.
Ninja Gaiden.
But how does the whole thing differ? Like, you've been to E3 before,
yeah.
So you know at least what it used to be, the big craziness and the security and the annoying, cheesy, smelly people and stuff, right?
Wait, hold on.
That was me. I have a very interesting story about the cheesy store.
Could you see over everybody's head?
Oh, yeah. It was outrageous. It's like, oh, it's Gojira. Oh, my God.
All right, so you go in there. There's no security whatsoever. You can pretty much... You could actually see stuff because you were on a day that wasn't really open to the public. So you... Didn't have to wait
in money lines. We got to play as many games as we possibly could. Got to see most of the booths in one day. So we got to see most of the game show.
What was most prevalent at this place? Was there a lot of DS stuff? Was it all? Was there a lot of 360 stuff there at all?
360 booth was pretty huge. There's a lot of really cool RPGs that are coming out for Xbox. So they had a lot of that debuting. The PS3 booth was probably the biggest. In the fact that, you know, they had probably the biggest layout, you know, the most amount of chicks hanging out in that particular area.
Were they
area.
Making a big deal out of Little Big Planet?
Not really so much. They had a tiny booth with only two screens, and I didn't really...
Have I told you how that's the most important game of the year?
You know what's really interesting about
no.
that? I really get the impression that both Microsoft and Sony and pretty much everybody, the online presence is like... Mostly being pushed in North America and definitely not so much in Japan, it seems.
Which is kind of strange because they say that we have the worst infrastructure.
Yeah. Japan has way better internet than the United States does.
I think it's just the numbers.
Actually,
I think there's just way more of us.
Like per minute or something.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But I know GBD was saying his download rates are just insanely fast.
I heard it was like $20 a second, dude.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know about that, but...
No, actually, yeah, it's pretty easy to get internet for free in Japan, because I won't go into that. But
that's a private matter.
Go Yahoo Broadband. Sweet. So anyway, to talk about the biggest one was probably PS3. The booth there was the biggest. They had probably the most new games. Call of Duty 4, we got to get a hold of. Metal Gear Solid 4, we got to get a hold of Guitar Hero 3. Which I got to rock, you know, fans of Guitar Hero got to rock out the Sabotage from the Beastie Boys.
Well, we played Guitar Hero 3. Well, not
Rock
you
Band.
And I,
Rock Band.
I played Guitar Hero 3 at E3 though, which was, I mean, it's the same as all the other Guitar Heroes, right?
Yeah, it's just exactly the same. But.
Actually, no, it's lame because I played the stupid mode where you do weird stuff to your partner and suddenly they can't see. The
battle music. Mode,
yeah,
I guess you say, the guitar
totally
battle mode.
Yeah.
That
Bad
was
idea.
Retardation beyond belief.
Some battle modes I'm happy with. I like to battle. But in that game, it either doesn't work or it was not done properly. And the stuff they're trying to add on to Guitar Hero 3 is just dumb. Except the guitar, which was awesome.
And same old stuff in Devil May Cry 4. Yeah, Dante and his twin and all that other stuff. So
Devil May Cry 4 is supposed to not be crappy. Rumor has it.
Cut.
Devil May Cry 1 was neat, and then 2 and 3 weren't.
Yeah, so, but 4 is supposed to actually be, according to the people I've talked to, because I saw them playing it at E3 as well. But all right, that's
not my type of game, but I mean, that's just me. So, I mean, a lot of big things that they had too is in Japan, mobile gaming is a kind of a big deal because people just travel at times, sit on the trains and what, and play their cell phones. So they had a lot of crazy mobile games. Like,
yeah. Are their mobile games actually good?
No.
DS games are
not
fun,
really
dude.
That impressed with the mobile gaming stuff.
He was talking about mobile phones.
Yeah, mobile phones.
Yeah, phone types. You know, I don't really want to play Dirge of Cerberus on my mobile phone. So, you know, yeah. Square Enix, stop making games for mobile phones and start making Final Fantasy games for PlayStation 3.
So
that's my other opinion.
Was the show, like, as wildly over the top as E3 used to be?
No, not exactly. I mean, they had the big booths and they had, the extravagant, booth babes and all that other stuff, but they didn't necessarily have the energy and the flair. I mean, maybe it was just me at the time. I bet you if we went there on the open day where all the kids and stuff, because it's free on the open day instead of just the press people trying to get interviews and stuff like that, with all the cosplay and things of that nature, it would be insane. But that would be the time to go, but really just wanted to buckle down and get a hold of some of the games and stuff. Cosplay, they was pretty prevalent as far as making sure that is for the booth babes and things of that nature were definitely in full force as far as making sure that their game is represented in that particular fashion.
You were telling me a story earlier today about how they kicked you out of the show.
Oh, yeah. This is very interesting. So, you know, going with the politeness of the Japanese way, we were playing a game in one of the booths there, and they said, so take it down and, all right, well, we're going to have to ask you to leave. You know, okay, very nicely. So the booth bays, which there's probably about 200 to 250 booth
thousand.
Babes. No, 200, 200, 250.
And they're all in a perfect uniform.
And they're all in exact the same uniform. And so they round up all the people. They escort them outside of the booth, and they line up.
Are you saying that their booth babes are all escorts?
In essence, for about 2 or 3 minutes, yes.
Okay.
But not in the sense.
Nice.
Particular. So they line everybody up, and to keep people from coming back into the booth, they make a perfect line from one end to the other end. So it's like 250, exactly the same, exactly the height. They could be clones for all that could be matter, just lined up perfectly down the line in the same exact stance. And just saying thank you for coming to the Sony booth, and just people were just at awe of this display of women, I would like to call it. But it was impressive nonetheless. So it was that was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen, but in a weird, in a good way.
Reminds me of ballroom dancing class in college. They separate the boys and the girls on each end, and then the girls have to. This is my advice to all those upcoming college students: take ballroom dancing, boys, because the girls line up in the other end of the gym. And they all move backwards, right? They take the cues from the men. The men move forward. The women move backwards in ballroom dance. So they line up. They face the wall. And so you just see a wall of women's backsides walking towards you. Anyway, that's my college advice. I don't think they offer it at UAT, but if you go somewhere you could take a course at ASU while you're maybe at UAT. Go
yeah,
ballroom
I'll be
dance.
Sure to check out ballroom dancing alone.
It's good. I took it twice. All right. So that was really the most interesting part of the show was closing time.
The wall of
women.
Yeah,
closing time. Yeah, I mean, everybody just got into suit, got into position, got into character for just closing time, and just
position.
It was just photo op. Yeah, position. It was photo op central. So you had to take another lap through the entire booth to catch everybody in the ending sequences they were doing for the end of the game show, and that was really the coolest part for me.
So based off of all the stuff, what's one prediction you could make for gaming this Christmas season? This holiday season.
Xbox is going to reign supreme. Sorry,
even
Sony.
Even in Japan?
Even. They're going to be making a force in Japan, too.
Oh,
it's
come
be
on.
Crazy.
What a cop-out. They're already practically doing that.
Yeah. It's going to be nuts.
What do you think is going to push the 360 in Japan? Why?
Last Remnant. Ninja Gaiden 2. Lost Odyssey. Beautiful Katamari.
Lost Odyssey is such crap. I can't even...
I wish they had another Sky Odyssey.
End of show, folks. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week, and I think Rich and I will discuss real predictions for the holiday season 2007.
I got some predictions.
We'll
I
be
bet
back.
You do. Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.